Whatever comes out of these gates, we've got a better chance of survival if we work together. Do you understand?
What is your suggestion, Master Jedi?
These allegations are false.
That's right. It's Yu-Gi-Oh! Time. Now, as a wee little boy, I loved me some Yu-Gi-Oh! I was so invested in the characters, the storyline, the cards, the card game in real life. I would collect them, trade them with my friends, play before school, during lunch, after school. Real lifetime bonds forged between friends in and around the playground, surrounding all things Yu-Gi-Oh! What a time to be alive at the peak of that popularity. And so, this being the Babble Bubble, where we go back and look at all things early 2000s and late 90s, I felt like I need to capture some of that just delightful nostalgia, that emotion that I felt where things were carefree and you feel like you could be a champion, something that as a person in my late 20s, it feels a little harder to grasp these days. So let's go back to Yu-Gi-Oh! Let's go revisit the Yugster himself. Now, I wish I could say that my diehard fandom kept going beyond my teenage years, in my early 20s, in my mid-20s, to my late 20s. But unfortunately, it did not. You know, I was like, I love these cards, I love these shows, I love the movies, but I don't really know if I'm plugged in enough and to, you know, recall everybody and say their names and what it is that they contributed. I mean, I obviously know Yugi Moto, the title character, and I know he's got his grandfather, and there was Pegasus and Seto Kaiba and Joey and so on and so forth, but I forgot the rest of them, you know, and I felt like I had failed myself because I loved these characters so much, and I just let the fandom drop. You know, as somebody who looks back at a lot of the early 2000s pop culture that I digested as a child and still remember vividly or interact with vividly, such as the Star Wars prequels or Lord of the Rings or Spider-Man, the X-Men movies, so on and so forth, I let Yu-Gi-Oh! Slip. You know, Pokemon has lasted longer for me than Yu-Gi-Oh! And I'm not talking about new Pokemon. I haven't played a new Pokemon game since Pokemon Gold and Silver. But just, you know, in terms of the decision to revisit that, and I mean, it's bigger pop culture, you know, and so it's hard to forget all of those Pokemon. There's way more games about it, not just in terms of, you know, the main kind of JRPG type stuff, but Pokemon Stadium, Pokemon Coliseum, movies that had more of a bigger splash, more episodes, so on and so forth. But Yu-Gi-Oh! At one point for me was bigger than Pokemon. And so that's why I wanted to go back and revisit it. So I decided to watch a single episode of the first season of Yu-Gi-Oh! Because I realized I effectively only watched the first two seasons, that is. I didn't really watch the sequel series, really. I think it was like Yu-Gi-Oh! GT. And, you know, I felt like the main character's hair kept getting bigger and bigger, and the colors got zanier and zanier, and I don't know, maybe I was just getting out of it. But just those original ones struck such a truth to me that it's just the perfect realm of escapism. So I decided to watch an episode, picking one in the first season, and I thought I wanted to see one with as many characters as possible. I don't want to go with the pilot. So I decided to go, this is towards the end of the major arc, which is the Dual Kingdom arc, in which we see Yugi Moto begin his epic duel against Pegasus, the bad guy. Now I'm going to cover that plot point in a moment, but I just want to take some time to talk about, you know, what this show not just only means to me, but people of my generation, or perhaps even a little younger as well. So naturally, because of such services as Crunchyroll, what's now available on HBO Max, just any sort of illegal streaming like watchcartoonsonline.io, stuff like that, Pirate Bay, you know, people who are in that kind of young millennial era, you could even say mid-millennial, have a fondness for anime that older generations do not, just in terms of availability. Far more anime are being made, and the ability to watch them, you know? And you can talk to anybody who's an anime fan, whether they're a big anime fan, a minor anime fan, or even somebody who just likes cartoons in general, and they can pinpoint what are the shows that first hooked them into anime. So Pokemon is one that's often dropped because when you sit down and watch it as a kid, you don't really know the cultural distinctions of what's, you know, an American cartoon versus a Japanese cartoon with a bit of dubbing over it. And that sort of was the toehold to get people looking further into others. Now, a lot of people say the first quote-unquote real anime that they got involved with would be Dragon Ball Z. That's kind of a gateway anime, a gateway cartoon into kind of the bigger stuff that we see going on today before you look on, you know, oh, let me try out other classic ones like Evangelion, or let me try kind of the new flashy ones like My Hero Academia or JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, so on and so forth. Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of exists in this middle section, somewhere between Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z. Now, it's important to note that these shows were coming out kind of concurrently. Dragon Ball Z was a bit older. Certain seasons of Pokemon were a bit older. But the way that we were watching them as children, as preteens, as teenagers even, in the early 2000s, it didn't necessarily have this degree of I'm watching it in chronology of release. Largely because, you know, it took a while. We don't have the same mainstream service of a show comes out in Japan. In under 6 months, we can get that in the States with English dubbing. There was more of a time delay. And similarly, there wasn't necessarily a dedicated anime channel that we have now, you know, in terms of what streaming services provide us, in which let me jump into, you know, this space to watch anime. You kind of watched that which was available. And effectively, that was two channels, at least for me and my peers, and that was what we saw on WB Kids, which was home to Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh!, and Toonami, which was home to Dragon Ball Z, among others. Toonami definitely had the ones that were the more grown-up kid-type, you know, shows. Something's a little more faster-paced, and it dove into some older stuff as well. While we're on the topic of Toonami really quickly, you know, this show used to primarily be a Star Wars program, so I think it's worth a shout-out here that the voice of the main Toonami robot is Steve Bloom. Steve Bloom, who has been a voice actor in many, many animes and animated series. One that Star Wars fan will most recognize is he is the voice of Garazeb Aurelius, otherwise known as Zeb, the lovable big purple guy in Star Wars Rebels. So there's a little Star Wars shout out. Got to give some love to, you know, the roots of the program. But anyhow, you just kind of would catch the shows that were airing when you could. And I, you know, I respect, you know, Toonami, WB Kids, etc., did their best to try to, you know, release new shows kind of in chronological order each week, or the idea that's each day, you know, that you could maybe catch an arc of Yu-Gi-Oh! Episodes if you came home every day at 4, turned on WB Kids, and watched your little 30-minute snippets. And if you watched 5 days in a row, you could probably see an arc or a miniature arc, because a lot of these episodes or a lot of these stories, a lot of these matches in Yu-Gi-Oh! Would take place over the course of 2 or 3 episodes. And so then you'd have another one that would tie into. So in the case of the one I just mentioned, there's 3 episodes of Yu-Gi-Moto battling Maximilian Pegasus. And so you could catch that on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and see the 2 Fallout, you know, episodes on a Thursday and Friday. But, you know, it was kind of playing on a bit of a repeat, too, because I remember there'd be times when I'd be watching these things, and also changed a little bit based on what market you were in, television market, where you would watch the conclusion of, let's say, the Dueling Kingdom mega arc, which I think comprises it's 49 episodes in the entire first season of Yu-Gi-Oh, and this one is effectively, I think it's like 46, somewhere between 40 and 46, and the other ones are just little 3 to 4 episodes tailing at the end too. I think it was 42, now that I say that. But anyhow, you'd catch that kind of on repeat over the course of multiple months. If you were to watch every day, you see a new episode, finish the old one, boop, let's go to the series premiere, or throw somewhere in there. And so, you know, I can't ever recall a time I sat down and watched the entirety of that Dueling Kingdom? I don't know. See, that just goes to show, like I said, I'm not as plugged into this as I used to be. But I can't think of a time I ever watched that in chronological order. I just kind of caught it when it was going. And, you know, the summertime would come around and you'd have the chance to sit at home and there'd be kind of summer marathons. And this is the same going with, you know, Pokemon, and the same with Dragon Ball Z as well, and where that plugs in. And you sort of felt like, okay, here I am getting to watch something I may have missed the first go around because I hopped in late, or watching it revisit now that I'm a little bit older, that, okay, I saw this bit when I was, I don't know, 7 years old. Now I'm watching it again when I'm 9, and maybe new themes can be there for me. So that was a really fun thing. And, you know, anybody who watched children's shows, and I think still does, I mean, I'm not familiar with what's actively airing on Cartoon Network, on Disney Channel, on Nickelodeon. But it's the idea that you were never really sure when new episodes of things came out. They just sort of did. And you'd rewatch a lot of old ones. And in most kids' show, that was okay because they were very, you know, episodic. It wasn't serial. You didn't necessarily feel like, oh, I missed out on something by hopping from episode 5 to episode 15. But if you were watching Yu-Gi-Oh!, you definitely did feel like that. Especially if you caught episode 2 of 3 that's in a battle, right? And so you feel like, oh, I missed this duel start because I didn't watch it on Monday. I'm watching it Tuesday. Luckily, there's some recapping going on, but you feel like I'm being left behind. And it's kind of that sensation of, oh, I don't want to be left behind. I have to stay up with this because I have friends who are living in the same town as me who are watching it on the same weird cycle that's going on. And I want to go to school. I want to go to summer camp. I want to go over to his house later, and we want to talk about this. And that culture of I have to be caught up to talk about it is such a definite thing that we're going through right now, especially in the age of streaming. You know, the idea that I have to watch all the episodes of this show within the first 2 weeks of it coming out or else I'm falling behind. Or, you know, you look at what's coming out on Disney Plus these days, whether you're talking about Star Wars IP, like The Mandalorian, like The Clone Wars Season 7, like the upcoming Bad Batch, or Marvel IP, if you're talking WandaVision, most recently Falcon and the Winter Soldier, upcoming Loki, you feel guilty if you do not watch these shows within the first 12, if not 6 hours of its initial release. And that kind of pressure was stuff that we were putting on ourselves as kids, that, oh gosh, I have to catch this Yu-Gi-Oh! Episode, even if it is the 80th time it's aired in the States, because all my friends are watching it at the same cycle I am, and I don't want to get to school and feel like I have no idea what they're talking about when they're referencing Pegasus's Toon Kingdom, or Toon World, I should say. You feel like, well, what on earth is that? That just sounds ridiculous. And so there was a little bit of that going on. I think it, you know, it sort of set the stage of the cultural phenomena, the water cooler talk that you hear often about TV shows, that, you know, was prevalent when Game of Thrones was airing. And the idea that, like, oh gosh, did you see the episode of Yu-Gi-Oh! That was on yesterday afternoon? Like, ah, don't tell me I managed to tape over my parents' wedding and without telling them on the VHS so I could see it. I did not do that, but I'm sure some kid did, and there was some very angry parent because, you know, Grandpa Joe spent such a great time learning how to use the video recorder to film your mom and dad walking down the aisle, and you had to put Yu-Gi-Oh! Over it because you got to see, oh my God, is this going to be the time that Taya proves herself that she's just not the girl of the group, but that she's got talent and that she's a good duel master, because your friends are going to make fun of you if you didn't see it, but you're not going to be able to watch it live because you got to go to your aunt and uncle's house. This is a whole thing that's just, you know, spilling out, a whole thing you got to wrap your head around. But it was fun. You know, it sounds like I'm complaining about it, but it was fun. Just like it is fun to desperately rush to, like, your TV after work today and be like, oh, God, you know, WandaVision has been out for 18 hours and I haven't seen it yet, but all my other friends have because they don't have the same work schedule I do. Or I wanted to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning because it comes out midnight Pacific Coast time, but I'm in Central Coast, and I tried to stay up to watch it, but I couldn't, and I fell asleep, and I'm late for work, and I didn't even see the show. And it's very similar levels of stress that you're putting on yourself, that you feel like your friends are putting on you, even if they're not explicitly saying it. That's what's kind of crazy about this whole thing. You know, it's just a desire of us as human beings to be part of a tribe, to be part of something. It's like a new version of our religion. It's like religion of the modern age, where we have to participate in cultural activities together, not alone, because it is doing it together, it's reacting together that makes us mesh in. So what we're seeing today is hardly unique. It's exactly what we were seeing in the early 2000s, and that's not unique in itself either. It's just the early 2000s allowed us a boom of interaction with media that previously had not been seen. You know, you were living in a post-Cold War environment in which there was a free trade of ideas, a free trade of media, and just a boom of television stations and unique TV shows and stuff. And it was such a fascinating time to be a kid because you knew that you were interacting with so much more. And, you know, one reason I think, besides the availability of media, I think that millennials are so much more open to anime compared to our, you know, Gen X counterparts is because we had such fun and good stuff like Yu-Gi-Oh!, like Pokemon, like Dragon Ball Z that was fed to us. Whereas, you know, Gen Xers, they had what? Speed Racer? I mean, all right, Speed Racer's cool. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, there's an episode where the plot of the episode is there's a guy who hates cars so much. He rides through downtown on a horse, and he has a whip, and he whips at cars. And he hires a bunch of crooks to, like, break all the brakes of the cars so they all crash. So he's the real villain. Oh, my God, it's the horse guy. He's the villain, Speed Racer, ladies and gentlemen. Versus, like, Yu-Gi-Oh!, you're like, holy crap, this is a dude who took the main character's grandfather's soul with an Egyptian artifact that's embedded within his eye, trapped it in a card and left a soulless, just a haggardly body behind, but in a way that wasn't too scary, right? It was the correct balance between scary and spooky. And that was awesome as a kid. You felt like you were watching something brand new, something that you weren't supposed to, even though it literally was dubbed by four kids entertainment. But it felt like it was pushing a boundary. And that was just such a neat thing. That was such a cool way to interact with storytelling. And yeah, so as you can see, I'm surprisingly more impassioned about what Yu-Gi-Oh! Meant to me than I thought. You know, as I'm talking about this, I'm finding like a box, not literally, I'm looking at nothing right now, but I'm finding like a box of ideas to pull from and just feelings, and it just riles me up. I'm almost tripping over my words while talking about this, because there's such a flood of happy emotions and just a wave of feeling, yes, this was such a cool thing to be a part of because it's telling of a narrative that we are part of today. That was supposed to be just 5 minutes, and here I am going on at the, you know, 18-minute mark, a little over that, still talking about it. But let's get to the particular episode. So, you know, I wanted to pick an episode, like I said, that touches upon as many characters as possible. So what we're looking at here, this was episode number... Oh, I lost it here for a second. Here we go. Episode number 35 of the show, of the first season. It aired in Japan on December 19th, 2000. And in the United States for the first time on September 21st, 2002. So this is what I'm talking about there being a two-year discrepancy between the initial release and when we get to interact with it. You know, by comparison, you can watch the newest season of, let's say, I don't know, Attack on Titan in Japan, And then less than 6 months later, you get to watch it here in the United States with an English dub. That's not even saying if you're someone who prefers subtitles, at which point that's near instantaneous. There are services, there are people out there who, as soon as an episode comes out in Japanese, they will put the English subtitles on. They may not be the best, but if you are desperate to interact with media, which we as a generation are, you're going to hop in on that. You know, I know a lot of people who do that. They'll wait for the Japanese anime they're following to come out, watch it in Japanese with the subtitles, and then just revisit it when the dubs come out. And you're able to compare what the two stories mean to you. So, but anyhow, this is a two-year difference. The little synopsis here is that Yugi prepares himself for his long-awaited and fated battle against Pegasus with the souls of Grandpa, Kaiba, Mokuba on the line. Meanwhile, Tristan and Bakura infiltrate the castle to find the Kaiba brothers in an attempt to cripple Pegasus's current plan. So here we go. We got the full crowd, though they're not mentioned in the synopsis. You got Taya Gardner, who's, like I said, you think she's the token girl of the group, but you realize she's so much more than that a few episodes prior to this. And then Joey Wheeler, who's Yugi's best friend. Anyhow, let's just go over these characters real quick before we get into what elements of the episode work. So, Yugi Moto is voiced by Dan Green, who does a truly wonderful job at this. What's so nice is that, for those who don't remember, Yugi is wearing he's the Millennial Puzzle, which is an ancient Egyptian artifact he managed to assemble together, and he wears it, and he has the option to turn into Yama Yugi, otherwise known as the Pharaoh, which is a deeper-voiced guy. Basically kind of like a grown-ass man to Yugi's little teenager, tapped into, you know, ancient Egyptian powers to be the greatest duelist of all time, and we later learned to be the chosen one, so to say. Dan Green voices them both, and he does such a good job voicing the little kid and, like I said, the grown-ass man within. Those who would revisit the show and maybe have an ear for familiar voices will recognize him from a few other things that came out in the same, era that I like to talk about. Going back to Pokemon, Dan Green voiced both Entei in Pokemon 3 of the movie and Mewtwo in Pokemon Mewtwo Returns, both released in 2001. As far as the United States release was concerned. So if you were a Pokemon fan, you would have heard that voice there. I think he's also in some other ones. Just looking at his filmography right now, there's Pokemon Forever, Pokemon Destiny Deoxys, Pokemon Arceus and the Jewel of Life. And then, of course, multiple Yu-Gi-Oh! Movies, including Yu-Gi-Oh! The Movie, Pyramid of Light, which I loved as a kid, went to go see the movie in the movie theater and felt like the coolest guy. Then Yu-Gi-Oh! Dark Side Dimensions and Yu-Gi-Oh! Bonds Beyond Time. So cool stuff. He is just a voice that you recognize. He's in a lot of video games as well. He plays Knuckles the Echidna in the Sonic the Hedgehog series, first showing up in that role in 2005 and carrying it all the way through 2010. So that's great. He also did a bit of animation work, too. So Dan Green, you're excellent voicing Yugi Moto. You really are the rock of the franchise as far as us listening in English are concerned. I've never actually watched this in the original Japanese. So I'm afraid, you know, I can't speak to Shinsuke Kazama, who is the... that's Yugi's voice in the Japanese version. Though I'm sure he does a great job because you need something to carry that that forward, of course. Next, we have Wayne Grayson, who plays Joey Wheeler. I think it's safe to say Joey Wheeler is probably the most popular side character in Yu-Gi-Oh! Because he's got the Brooklyn accent, like, "Hey, Yug! How you doing, my man? Let's get a slice of the pizza!" You know, I mean, that's more, I don't know, Italian, but he's easy to impersonate. He's cool. His deck's got a crap ton of dragons in it, and I love those dragon cards, like the Red Eyes Dragon. That's some fun stuff. Not Blue Eyes, though. That's more it's Blue Eyes White Dragon. That's Seto Kaiba who's got that. Seto Kaiba plays a great, you know, foil to Yu-Gi-Oh! Who starts as a villain, but Yugi has to rescue at the end. There's Tristan. Interestingly enough, his voice actor was recast after episode 10 for reasons I don't know. Tristan, I actually think, is a better supporting character than Joey. Joey's kind of like a glorified, cocky cheerleader. I mean, he does play where Tristan doesn't necessarily, but Tristan, I just feel like he's got a better head on his shoulders, man. Even if he has way too much hair gel that makes it look like he's wearing a pointy hat, I think he's the right mix of comic relief and brains, where Joey is just kind of a, you know, hey, oh, I'm a walk in here, you know, that type of stuff. But, you know, Tristan, I think, will, you know, last longer in the, not last longer, they're all in the show more or less at the same time. I guess actually Tristan not, because they recast this damn actor. But, you know, there's more or less just a little bit of, you know, character strength there. I think he's better as a side where Joey feels like he's stealing the show. That's probably an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to stand by it. The last in the group being Taya Gardner, who I was telling y'all about. It's the one, she's the, you know, the female friend. Kind of a will-they-won't-they romantic interest with Yugimoto, but it's a kid's show, so they're not going to dive into it that much. Then we have Grandpa. I didn't know his name was Solomon, but I'm looking here, and his name is Solomon Moto. That's cool. Pegasus, voiced by Darren Dunstan. Maximilian Pegasus is a brilliant villain. I mean, a truly astounding villain, because so many villains in anime, in just most media out there, you know, it's like, let's go with the big macho guy who touches upon all of the characteristics that we think as a big tough guy. Where Pegasus is a bit femme, which is great. He's got the long hair. He talks with this type of, you know, oh, Yugi boy, you know, teasy kind of snooty voice. And it just makes for a good villain in that way, just in terms of his characterization. Plus, he's got some super, super cool cards. There's Toon World, which I talked about earlier, which is a lot of fun. I remember when the episode first came out, we're like, we got to get the Toon World cards for Pegasus. That's going to really set the playing field even. But then, you know, both you and your friend would have a Toon World card, and you both play it, and nothing would really get accomplished. But it's still fun to imagine that. You have Megan Hollingshead plays May Valentine, who is kind of Joey's cat, the Catwoman to Joey's Batman. And she's great. I think there's a lot she adds to the show. I mean, I don't want to say sex appeal, because she's a kid. She's animated and it's a kid show, but effectively, you know, she was probably a lot of people's first anime waifu crush. I'm just throwing that one out there. Misty's great from Pokemon. Taya Gardner is great from this show, but my Valentine, she kind of hits that to a certain demographic, we'll just say. And then there's a couple other, you know, recurring villains, or duelists, I should say. There's Weevil Underwood. He kind of has bug-type decks. Rex Raptor, the name kind of speaks for itself, what you're getting there. And then you have Croquet, who's like Pegasus' little side minion, who does all the introductions. He's got a cool gravelly voice like this. And, you know, it just kind of adds to the world building that you have this dude out here doing his thing. So it's all great. Fun fact about the grandfather that I learned all of, like, 10 minutes ago is that the grandfather was played by a woman, Maddie Blaustein. Maddie Blaustein, for those of you once again plugged into early 2000s animated stuff, was the voice of Meowth. So there we go. Maddie, you provide us with some great characters. Grandfather Solomon and Meowth the Talking Cat. So that, there we go. Team Rocket's blasting off again on that one. Excellent cast. Excellent group of characters bringing in their own diverse things. You know, even though Yugi's the protagonist and he's trying to become the champion to save the captured soul of his grandfather, all his friends are still trying to win too. You know, and that leads to a lot of inner conflict. They're not there just to support him. They're there to win. You know, they want to get the big prize money. They want to, you know, be deemed the greatest duelist of all time. And so he has to even take on his friends or take on the people who defeat his friends. And at the end, they still love each other so much that they're still all together and they get like matching hand tattoo things. And it's really cute. It's very moving. But to this particular episode, Yugi versus Pegasus, Match of the Millennium, Part 1. So, at this point, Seto Kaiba like I said, Yugi's rival of sort. He has played Pegasus and lost, and it's because Pegasus is a cheater. And this is going back again why I love Pegasus as a villain. A good villain in any sort of battle series, whether it's, you know, a board game battle series or a disc battle series or a card battle series or any sort of fighting. You see this in something new like Sword Art Online. They have to cheat because you want to teach kids that cheating equals villain and that the hero will win by playing the game as it's meant to be played. And that's exactly what starts to happen here. You know, Pegasus has the Millennium Eye where he can read the thoughts of his opponents and he can see the cards of his opponents. That makes him feel nigh unbeatable. And in this episode, which, like I said, this episode only covers a third of the duel, but in this episode, you see him using his power and pretty much just beating Yugi down. But what I think is such a great one is that even though he's being beaten down, even though there's so obviously a trick that he's broadcasting how he's cheating, not just to Yugi, but everybody watching it, everybody watching the recording of it, he and his friends are holding true. Joey, who, to be fair, I was just shitting on Joey a little bit, but Joey says, like, oh, that's just his mind game. Don't let him get to his Yu-Gi-Oh! You can still beat it. There's no the all hope is lost mentality that you so often hear. And that's fun. That's what you want the supporters to be like. That's like what Brock and Misty give to Ash when he's doing his Pokemon dueling. And, you know, that's what like, Bulma and, God, I don't even remember the name of the old guy, but the old sensei from Dragon Ball give to Goku when he's, you know, fighting Piccolo or something like that. It's a good, you know, dynamic you see there, and that's friendship. Friendship is what you know will win. Even though things seem hopeless in the match, you know that friendship is going to pull through. And meanwhile, on the side, and this is where I give shout-out, Tristan is not going to just simply watch and cheer on. He's trying to be helpful in his own way. He rescues the soulless body of Kaiba's little brother, while also looking for Kaiba and the grandfather as well. That's Mokuba is Kaiba's little brother. And Tristan's trying to be like, what can I do within the realm of myself, which is not, I'm not a player, you know, I'm not just going to be a cheerleader. I'm going to try to take on and help. And he does. He does a great job, and there's a great bit of comic relief. He hides in a knight's costume, which is sort of a classic Scooby-Doo tactic. Once again, shout out to cartoons that we as children would be familiar with. And it's good way that they're putting a side story in there, which is Tristan trying to say, how can I sneak off into the castle and try to even the playing field? Even the playing field, not by helping Yugi cheat, but by making Pegasus less of a cheat, because Pegasus literally has all the cards in his hands when he has the captured souls of three people in cards. And so Kaiba's trying to say, well, maybe if I have their bodies, that will give us a little bit of an advantage. So it was a good episode. I enjoyed rewatching it. I probably at some point will watch the other two in that arc. Maybe go back and watch the full 49 and maybe the later seasons too. That episode has Bakura in it, who becomes the main villain in season two. And I really, really hated that guy. He just didn't vibe with me in the same way that Pegasus did. I don't know, maybe because there's a betrayal aspect in there in a way, or like, oh, he's just a kid who, rather than Pharaoh, he's got the Pharaoh's evil counterpart. I don't remember the details. Like I said, that season two stuff, that's like City of Champions or whatever the hell that arc was called, but I'll probably rewatch it because I'm excited and to see, and maybe Bakura will grow on me as a villain. But it's hard to top Pegasus, who breaks so many expectations and does it so well. So with that being said, thank you for dropping by the Babble Bubble and listening to my little diatribe about Yu-Gi-Oh! And early 2000s anime, for that matter. Make sure to subscribe to whatever service you're listening to this podcast, be it Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or more. You can follow the show at Y2KBubble on Twitter and at the Babble Bubble on Instagram. You can also check out the new show I'm on, the One and Done Film Club, where we, and by we I mean me and Nikki Kumar of the Imperial Senate Podcast and Alden Diaz of Octo Radio, pick one film from a beloved franchise every other week, and we watch it and offer commentary, and we'd like to watch it with you. Previous franchises include Indiana Jones, Pirates of the Caribbean, Harry Potter, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and there are so many more to come. We have Season 1 still in the middle of recording that. A new episode should be dropping a week after this episode you're listening to right now. Season 2 is already planned out. Season 3 is under, you know, deliberation. So we are, it's a long-term commitment. It's a passion project, and I highly recommend you listen to it if you like my ramblings. And if you don't like my ramblings, but you're choosing to listen to the show and you feel like, I wish somebody would interrupt Reed and shut him up, I strongly advise you listen to the second most recent episode of the One and Done Film Club, where we talk about John Wick. I get shut down pretty hard in that one, as maybe I should. I was being kind of a brat. I don't know. But yes, you can check that out at One and Done Show on Twitter, and look up One and Done Film Club wherever podcasts are provided. Per usual, it was a pleasure having you all this evening, and I will catch you all around the